I'm Lisa DeLay, and you're listening to the Spark My Muse podcast. Welcome to Spark My Muse, everyone. Today, my guest is an author and speaker. He wrote the book An Unhurried Life, and his name is Alan Fadling. Thank you so much, Alan, for being on my program today.
Oh, you're welcome. It's good to be with you.
And you are the president and founder of Unhurried Living, Inc., and a lot of what you do is help people realize that there's a better way to live, an unhurried way to live, and we'll dig into that as we get into the program a little bit more. But I'm hoping that you can fill in some of the backstory as to what brought you to the point of wanting to write about an unhurried life and what some of your religious or spiritual background was growing up.
Sure. Well, my own story, I became a Christian. I became a follower of Jesus. I eventually became a minister in a church setting. And I found myself frantically working hard to try and do what I understood to be, you know, God's work. And the irony was I was so frantically working for God, I didn't have any time to enjoy God. And that began to result in some pretty significant burnout. I really had a kind of crisis, maybe not a crisis of faith, but maybe it was a crisis of vocation. And that was a season, that was about 25 years ago, but that was a season of deep rediscovery of why I was doing what I was doing, and that I was trying to earn something, prove something that really couldn't be earned or proven. And so that led me eventually, I began to label that or describe that as living a more unhurried life, not so frantic, not so driven, not so perfectionistic, not so insecure, really, but finding a much deeper confidence in my own spiritual journey as I slowed down a little, paid attention, learned to be present. So that's a little bit of what the journey has been. The first line of the book is, I'm a recovering speed addict. The next line, you know, is, I'm not talking about a drug, I'm talking about my soul.
Do you think a lot of that was performance-based, that you felt that you wanted to do a good job for God, or you were trying to not let people down? Or what do you think made you so fast, I guess you could say, so concerned with being productive?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Part of it was this feeling that the God I thought I was serving was rather demanding, pretty strict, had high expectations, and that my main job was to work for this God. And who knew how close he was? I mean, I had a theology that said he was real nearby, but I had a practice that sort of made it look like he was somewhere in another universe. And I think the other dynamic among probably a lot of others is wanting to make sure people around me liked what I was doing. And so that whole tendency toward working for the pleasure of others, for the approval of others, that was a pretty strong engine accelerating the pace of my soul.
Yeah. Well, I know it's not just I've seen this problem a lot. I know you went to seminary. I've gone to seminary as well. And there's a lot of people in ministry who are really driven. But of course, it's not just ministry. Like anyone in business profession, and so many professions are really driven to succeed or have a lot of ambition. And they have a very hurried life. It seems like a universal type of problem. I know you speak in a lot of different areas, and it's not just a Christian dilemma for sure. You've probably seen a lot of people with the same sort of symptoms.
Yeah, it's not at all limited to Christians. It's not at all limited to, you know, North Americans. I mean, I happen to be one of those. I've spoken in business environments, and as I interact with people in business, and we begin to get at this idea of slowing down to be more effective, slowing down to see more of what's going on and make better decisions, make a better way forward. There's a real resonance there. You know, I think themes like mindfulness that have become so important in a lot of business environments, to me, gets at this idea of slowing down just a bit and noticing more, enjoying more, entering in more. The other thing is, over the last year, I've traveled to an Asian context, an African context, a European context, a Latin context. And in each of those settings, I found this same idea really rang true. In a lot of those cases, it was an urban setting. And so I think the technological acceleration that a lot of us feel is a real one just about everywhere.
Yeah, definitely. Technology has really invaded all of our spaces and made the discipline of keeping, I guess you could say, sacred space or our own space that much more important. I mean, do you find that, I know you talk about silence, solitude, and prayer as some points where we can work on having an unhurried life, and that probably means keeping the phone in the car or on Do Not Disturb or something, right?
Yeah.
So what can you tell me about, I mean, it's funny because in the Bible, of course, Jesus says, my burden is easy, you know, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And so you would get the sense that it's not supposed to be like that, but.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Well, I think one of the points of really why I wrote the book I wrote was I was describing myself as a follower of this Jesus, and yet Jesus' way of life and my way of life looks so different. And I'm not just talking about, you know, morality or, you know, about Jesus, you know, abilities or any of that. I there's a line in one of the Gospels where it says that Jesus often withdrew to lonely places to pray. Well, I could swear that line wasn't in my Bible for the first 10 years of my spiritual journey. I don't remember reading it. I don't remember anyone pointing to it. And so what I've wanted to say to those who would describe themselves as followers of Jesus is, look at how he lives. Look at how unhurried he is as it relates to people. He will stop and have a conversation when his followers are trying to move him along to the place they were all heading and the agenda that they were putting into action. He had the ability to slow down enough to enjoy time, seasons of prayer, even when life got crazy and the crowds could not get enough of him, you know, from morning till night. Still, he would step away and he would slow down. One of the metaphors I've come to really appreciate is just the metaphor of breathing. It couldn't be simpler than that. When I get hurried, I live as though breathing is exhale only. If you sit and try and exhale only for, 60 seconds, you'll quickly feel that that's not going to work very well for you. And yet, the way I have sometimes worked in the past, the way I've conducted myself in the past, you'd think that exhale is the only movement. And so I like to think of unhurried as what might inhale look like for you in the season you find yourself.
Well, tell me a little bit more about that. I want you to unpack that a little bit.
Yeah, well, so for example, I love getting things done. I mean, I really like working hard. I like accomplishing things. It's very satisfying. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. But again, if I find myself in this mode where it's exhale only, one of the things that begins to happen there is I find myself becoming incredibly task-focused and increasingly people unaware. or I rush past people to get things done. And if there's anything that my Christian faith tells me is that there's hardly anything on this planet more important than people. Mm. So when I get busy and I'm getting things done, I would, of course, say, looking at my list of things, that somehow or another, at least theoretically, I'm doing them to benefit people. You know, maybe I'm preparing a presentation and I hope people will benefit from it. But sometimes I'm more focused on the presentation and how good it is and how well organized it is and how well researched it is, all of which is important. But I haven't slowed down enough to just think about, to whom am I going to speak? What would help them? What would benefit them? And when I slow down, I think the irony is I become more productive, not because I'm getting more done, but because what I'm doing is more in tune with the reality around me. In this case, the reality of the particular people I'm serving, whether it's in a business environment, a ministry environment, a personal environment, a neighborhood environment, whatever. Mm. I slow down and I notice people. And so that's one of the inhale movements. It's you know, some might use the language of presence. Mm-hmm. It's learning to be present at every place I find myself and not running past people to get the next thing done. You know, we've all had the experience where we're having a conversation and we have the profound sense that the person's looking about 5 degrees to one side or the other. They're already on their way to the next whatever. Mm-hmm. And that never feels good. The sad thing is I've been that person too often. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it may well have been that I was getting ready to do something really, really important that maybe in my story I thought God was inviting me to do. But I can hardly think that God was inviting me to ignore a person or run past a person to go get that thing done.
Mm. Yeah, there's such a cost. You talk about that in your website, as I was looking through your website before I spoke to you now, and that there's a real cost to a hurried life. And the cost, of course, is there. We don't have a fullness in our soul, and we also lose out on people, too, that the meaningful interactions and connections with people. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that, you know, as we slow down, we are more open to the needs of people, whether it's preparing a presentation or just having time for conversation. If we're not looking to that next thing and we're actually there and we're actually open to even the idea of slowing down, but actually open to the person, a lot of problems could actually solve themselves right there because there's that openness, you know, so it really makes a lot of sense.
Well, and, you know, again, to use this breathing metaphor, when you're in a situation where you're with another person, you know, so often I have been the speaker guy, you know, I've got something to say and I'm promoting something, I'm communicating something, I'm giving something, you know, some goodie or whatever. And I'm the speaker, which again is kind of an exhale movement. But it's hard to overestimate just how powerful the gift of listening is when I'm with another person. And not just listening with about 20% of my attention, but who knows, maybe 80% of my attention, 90% of my attention. And I've found that when I give people that gift, even if I don't have anything amazing or wise to offer in the moment, just the listening is such a powerful thing. And that's, again, part of the fruitfulness, the goodness of this unhurried pace. You know, we end up giving people things without even realizing we were giving people those things. And I really like that.
So if people are not in the habit of slowing down and it makes them nervous or it makes them feel like they're wasting time or that they're lazy or, you know, not making good use of their time. Because that can be really addictive, like the feeling that I'm too slow. Actually, I should be productive. Like, how do you recommend that people just get better into that mindset?
Well, I think one, you have to get a little bit underneath it and ask the question, why do you feel that way if you slow down? What is that? What is that anxiety? What is that inner itchiness? And I know for myself, there's one spiritual writer, a guy named Henry Nouwen, who said that a lot of us find our identity in one of three primary ways. We think of it as we are what we do, we are what we possess, and we are what others say about us. And when we take those as our primary means of defining our identity, the problem is how much doing is enough to then feel important and valuable and productive and such. And the answer is just a little more. Because what I've done so far may have satisfied for the moment, but it didn't feel like it lasted. You know, I feel like I'm still hungry, and so I need to do more. Or how much possession is enough? You know, I live in Southern California. I have a lot of friends who would disagree with the wisdom of Jesus when he says our lives do not consist in the abundance. And so we would say, yeah, but I think my life would be better if I had a newer car or a bigger house or the latest computer. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So the challenge is when I define myself by those things, there's never enough of those things to feel settled, to feel at peace, to feel relaxed inside. Mm. And I think if we can say maybe my identity is not dependent on accomplishment or acquisition or the opinion of others, maybe it runs deeper than that. Maybe I could do what I do from a place of settled identity rather than doing what I do to try and earn or acquire a sense of identity. Maybe it's something that happens in me instead of something out there that I need to go locate and get a hold of.
That's so wise. And I think keeping that in the front of our minds and not getting even just overrun and overwhelmed with our schedule would go such a long way to bring that to fruition in our lives. I'm reminded too of John Ortberg, and he talked a little bit about this. And one thing really struck me. Now I'm going to have to do a little research and put it in the show notes about which book he put this in. But he talked about doing something in terms of discipline and pushing back on the idea that we need to get in like the shortest line in the checkout in the store. Yeah. And he said, get in the longest line and just challenge your suppositions that you have to be super efficient and, you know, you have to hurry and actually talk to the people in line and talk to the cashier and just slow your life down purposefully by picking the longer way, because you are not a slave to this idea that's really false, that you actually have to be that productive and that hurried. That is not really true. And I like the idea of pushing back on the idea, the lie of that hurriedness is better, by just actually confronting it with a different behavior.
I think that's a great idea. I think, you know, we're recording this in the midst of a Christmas season, and there's so many ironies of the frantic hurry that happens in a season like that. You know, I mean, it's supposed to be the season, at least for some, who are of a savior or, you know, the coming of Jesus, and yet we're frantically doing everything but remember that. It's silly. But to your point, I think that would be a wonderful experiment for, especially if, you know, for some of your listeners who they're not sure they're buying it. This unhurried thing sounds exactly like what you described. It sounds lazy. It sounds like a waste of time. It sounds unproductive. Why in the world bother? And my only suggestion would be, well, I'm not trying to prove anything or sell you anything. Try it as an experiment. If you got in the slow lane of the freeway behind the truck that's going 5 under the speed limit, and then you feel the inner itch and drivenness and craziness, what is it saying to me? Why? I always like to think of it this way. The me that's, you know, racing down the freeway and getting between cars and trying to save 3 minutes, you know, is that really the best me to be arriving at the location I'm aiming for, that anxious, hurried me? Mm-hmm. What if a little bit less hurried, a little bit more peaceful me showed up instead, 3 minutes later, admittedly, might that not actually be more valuable than the 3 minutes I save, as though I'm going to somehow use them in some remarkably productive way? You know, these 3 minutes I've saved, I'm going to change the planet because I saved 3 minutes. It's never really happened for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've done little tricks too, like, you know, you set the clock 5 minutes ahead or and try to build in a cushion of time so that you don't feel crazy when you're driving somewhere late. And it does help. And also just feeling like there's no clock that can be the boss of you, you know, that that, you know, if you're late or feeling really busy or really late, it's because you've designed your life in a way that has allowed you to feel out of control. But that is actually also a construct and an illusion, and that life, it's kind of like that's the life you're designing. It's not the life that's meant for you. It's not the life of a full soul, and it's very much tied to exactly what you're saying. What is the life that we're meant for? Is not the one where we feel crazy all the time and we feel like things are just about to spin out of control.
Exactly. I think that you use the language of slavery. I think we ought to ask ourselves, if we feel like we can't slow down, we can't take some time, we can't do this and that, we really are behaving as though we are slaves. And there's an interesting piece of wisdom in the Old Testament about the Sabbath, when the Jewish people are invited to practice it after they've left Egypt, where they were slaves, where they did not have the freedom to stop for that one day in seven that was given to them by their God, that he says to them, "You were slaves." Well, that's a past tense. This unhurried life might actually be a way of our lives and over our situation, rather than behaving as though we're slaves.
It's true. You talk about Sabbath in other parts on your website too, and I was noticing the part about the 1 minute Sabbath, and that is a real powerful 1 minute if it's just 1 minute. But you and you talk about rhythms of rest and impact, and maybe you could unpack a little bit of what you talk about there.
Sure. Well, actually, we're working on a little resource right now. We're going to release it next week. It's just called Take 5, 22 Ways to Enjoy God. It's, you know, sometimes certain people think that I'm talking about you have to take, you know, 7 days at a monastery or a whole day somewhere, you know, and just sit still and go crazy or something. But really, I'm talking more about a sense of pacing, a sense of rhythm. And so, you know, I can, between answering emails or between appointments, I can take just a few minutes and stop and remember who I am and who God is to me. And I can let that be the stable, solid place from which I do whatever's coming next. When I get hurried, I become anxious. I become distracted. And I've just found that an anxious me does not do as good a work as a peaceful me. There's a very wise sage who once said that anything that can be done in anxiety can be done far better in peace. And that's been exactly my experience, that the anxious me gets tunnel vision. I don't see as many possibilities. The peaceful me is much more wise, much more creative, actually much more energized.
And that's actually true just chemically in your brain, because when you have stress, you have this release of cortisol, and it's a fight or flight chemical. And that means that other parts of your brain are shutting down, and you actually cannot think better and think more openly and problem solve, because your body is ready to just run or punch somebody. So it just makes like chemical sense too.
Yeah.
It makes so much sense to try to slow down or eliminate the big cortisol releases in our bodies by calming ourselves down to have better rhythm. And when we have to be anxious for some very important stressful reason, we can be. But then when it's time to have some balance and to rest, we need to really give our bodies a break, because that's the kind of repeat dumps of cortisol is what causes disease. Can you tell us about the course you have on your site about influence from the inside out. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, my wife and I have launched a new nonprofit. It's called Unhurried Living. And the very first thing we decided we wanted to do was develop an online course that would help people practice this rhythm of solitude, silence, and prayer. What we've found in our tradition is that this is really ancient wisdom, but at least in my neck of the Christian neighborhood, it wasn't a very well remembered one. And so it has been that practice that has been so life-giving for us. We would argue it saved our lives. We would argue it saved our marriage. I would argue it saved my vocation. And so we found that it's incredibly strategic, and it can be difficult to put into practice. And so the purpose of the course, Influence from the Inside Out, is to walk people through developing this experience, this practice of stepping away, maybe for an hour, maybe for 30 minutes, maybe longer if you wish, to just be still, to listen, to be alone. A lot of people feel kind of nervous about that if they've not experienced that practice before. So that's what we're really trying to help people do. And so we developed it as a pace yourself sort of course. You can take as long as you'd like. You can be as unhurried as you'd like, you know, walking through it. And so that's available on a link from our website at unhurriedliving.com.
That's something you developed together with your wife. Does she help you in some of your speaking as well?
Yeah, we really partner in a lot of what we do. She's a photographer by training. She really has a far more creative mind on that side of things. So she's really producing a lot of the resources, whereas, you know, I've written a book and, you know, I'm doing a lot more of the traveling and speaking, but we're actually beginning to do more of that kind of work together as well.
Yeah, this is the kind of stuff, the kind of food for the soul that is really needed, especially I think in general for everyone, but I've noticed hearing some people recently talking about burnout, some people more publicly and some people more privately talking about it in terms of ministry and burnout and just kind of going until they can't do it anymore.
Yes.
It's the kind of thing that's really heartbreaking because I don't think it has to get to that point. I hope that people really check out your resources and don't get to that point where they have to just kind of roll over and say, I'm done. I mean, we're humans and we don't really run like machines. I think we kind of expect a little too much of ourselves. And where else can people find out what you're doing and more about your work and resources?
Well, I hope they'll come and visit, you know, our website, unhurriedliving.com. We're putting out free resources pretty much every week there. And so an email list there, they could sign up for that. We do have a Facebook and Twitter feed. They're welcome to come and interact with us there. Those would be some of the ways that they could stay in touch and learn more about us.
So this will be going out in the week of Advent. I don't know if you celebrate Advent at all, but I never did as a kid. But now the church where I am, they start the Christian calendar at last week with hope, and then this week is peace, and I believe next week is joy and love, and then, of course, the nativity. And it's kind of one of those things, like, you can't really argue with any of those four themes or anything. They keep you going all year long.
Yeah.
So this is definitely one of them. Having peace has to start, you know, within before you can expect peace with your family or with your neighbor, or with your world. And I think this is definitely has to be where it starts.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining me.
No, it was good to be able to visit with you. I've enjoyed this conversation very much.